Good evening. Good evening. My name is Marilyn Crotty. I'm the director of the Florida Institute of Government at the University of Central Florida, and I have been engaged by the City of Palm Coast to facilitate the charter review process in the city. It's something that I do for cities all over the state of Florida, and I'm happy to be able to bring my knowledge and expertise to the process in this city. I do want to assure you at the outset that my role as a facilitator is to guide the council and the citizens through the process. It is not to influence the process. It is not to push one agenda or another. I am absolutely neutral on all of the different aspects of this charter review process. My intent, however, is to assist Palm Coast in, at the end of the process, having as good a charter as they desire to have, that is in compliance with law, and that is not in conflict with state or federal law. So with that said, I am going to call to order this first public workshop on the charter review process and welcome you all here. It's really great to see citizens turn out. As I told you, I do this kind of work all over the state, and by and large, very few citizens show up to engage in this kind of an effort. So it's encouraging to know that citizens of Palm Coast care about their government and are willing to spend some time talking about issues that are very important to the structure of the city. So let me just review the agenda for tonight with you. I think everyone probably had an opportunity to pick one up. So of course I'm doing the welcome now, and then I'm going to do a little overview of this whole process, how it's going to roll out after tonight's meeting. We'll be looking at some basic information about charters. I've called that City Charters 101. And at that point, I'm going to open up the workshop for comments from all of the public who are here. I'm going to ask you to confine your remarks to 3 minutes, but you are able at this time to talk about any issue that's in the charter, that's not in the charter, that you think needs to be changed, added, deleted, whatever your ideas and thoughts are at this time about the charter. At that point, we'll move on into looking at specific sections of the charter. So tonight, we're going to look at sections 1 through 5. And as you'll see, there are going to be subsequent workshops that are looking at the other parts of the charter. But again, let me remind you that your comments and your questions, if you have any, can deal with any part of the charter, not just the ones we are discussing tonight. And we'll open up the floor again at that point for more public comment, because you may have heard some things that raise some issues or concerns on your part, and you want to again address the group and the council. If you spoke earlier, you're welcome to speak again. We again will confine it to a 3-minute presentation, so there'll be time for everyone to have a say, and the meeting will adjourn at that point. Now, we're scheduled to be here no later than 8 o'clock. If we have finished the whole agenda and everyone has said everything they want to say, I don't think I'm going to make you stay here till 8 o'clock, so we'll see how it goes. Now, I do want to share with you the role of the council tonight, because while they are here, they are mainly here as observers. They want to hear your thoughts, your ideas, and learn a little bit from what I'll share about charters in general and about this charter. I do want to invite the council members, however, as we get into some of the issues that you might want to consider, that if you have questions, that it's not clear what I've said to you, you don't understand, and also for the public, if you want some clarification or some more information in addition to what I'm sharing, I'm going to be happy to answer those questions if I can. And we also have the city attorney here, who I may refer to because I am not an attorney and I don't like to pretend I'm an attorney, so we'll turn to him if there's any legal expertise that's required tonight. So the council will not be debating any of these issues tonight. They will not be making any decisions. Under Florida law, you actually can't vote at a workshop. You can't make any decisions. So all of those kinds of activities will occur at a later date as we get further into the process. So any questions about the agenda for tonight? All right. So this is the process that the City of Palm Coast has established for reviewing the charter. The main purpose behind this process was to allow for maximum public participation. I will tell you, in my experience, this is a highly unusual way of doing it because I rarely see cities setting up this number of public workshops. And your city really is to be commended for making this effort. Most of them have meetings and maybe one or two people show up, but not this extent of going all over the city and making sure that access is available for everyone. So as you can see, they set up four public workshops. So this is the first one. Each workshop is going to be in one of the council members' districts so that it's fairly easy geographically for people to attend, but you're welcome to go to all of the workshops no matter where they're located. I will tell you that the next one on October 4th, and by the way, they're all at this 6 to 8 o'clock time period. The one on October 4th is at the Indian Trails Middle School. The one on October 18th is at the Buddy Taylor Middle School. And the October 26th is at the Flagler Palm Coast High School. So the school board has been very generous in allowing use of their facilities. And we will again hopefully see many of you and additional people as we go through this process. After those public workshops are completed, I will be writing a report that collects all the input that we've heard during those meetings and have a report ready for the council, who will have a workshop on November 28th. This one will be at City Hall and it starts at 9 in the morning. And then they have planned to have additional charter workshops that have not yet been scheduled during the months of December and January. So this is not a quick process. We're going to take enough time to really do a thorough study of the charter. At the time that the council determines that there are things that they would like to change in the charter, the city will need to create an ordinance that will go through the usual public process when you have an ordinance before you, and there'll be two public hearings on that ordinance specifically, which again, there will be time for citizen input to those hearings. And once we've gone through that whole process, if there are changes that the council desires to make to the charter, they will appear on the ballot for the election in November, on November 6, 2018. So that's what this is all aiming towards, giving enough time to have that appear on the ballot. Now, there is nothing that says you have to change anything in your charter. This is totally something that is up to the public and the citizens, the council, if they want to make some changes. So we'll see as the process evolves. If there are issues that come up that demand change, then hopefully your council will address those and you can have the opportunity to try to influence them on that. So let me talk a little bit about charters in general and characteristics of good charters, because we want Palm Coast to have a really good charter. So all cities have charters. Currently there are 412 cities in the state of Florida, and they each have a charter, and each one is unique, because that's really the wonderful thing about local government. When you have your own city, you can create the kind of government that works best for your community. So you should think of the charter in terms of the Constitution. This is your local Constitution. You have a state constitution, you have a federal constitution, and your charter is your city constitution. And what I always encourage groups to do when they are looking ahead and change towards maybe making some changes in the charter is that you should not base those discussions and those decisions on the current people who are in positions. So regardless of who's on your city council, regardless of who your city manager, your city attorney are, don't be influenced by that as far as what you see in the charter. What you're looking for is to have a document that will work well 5 years from now when different people may be in those positions, 10 years from now when different people will be in those positions. So what you're looking for is what really will work best for your community, regardless of whoever is in office. Now, charters should be simple, clear, and compact. You don't want a charter that's 50 pages long. You want something that basically is going to lay out the structure and function of your local government. And it needs to be something that citizens can clearly understand, be able to pick up and understand. Hopefully high school students, middle school students should be able to read your charter and know what your government is all about. And that's what I said. And your charter needs to be consistent and uniform. In other words, one section shouldn't contradict something that's in another section. And you need to make sure that they are consistent and unambiguous. I have shared with the council, when I made a brief presentation to them, stories of cities who the charter language was so confusing that in one city that I won't name, the city council actually sued the mayor over something that was in the charter. Now, you don't want that to have to happen. You don't want your city to have to sue itself to clarify. And that case actually went up to the Florida Supreme Court to decide, was the mayor right or was the council right? And again, the reason it became a lawsuit was because it was not clear in the charter of whose responsibility it was to take some action. And the mayor thought it was his responsibility, and the council thought it was their responsibility, and that's why they ended up in a lawsuit that, of course, cost who money? The taxpayers, the residents of that city. One of the things that is really important in a charter is that while it's comprehensive, it should not be loaded up with details. You don't want to put into a charter the day-to-day operations of a city, because those change over time. Your charter is usually there for a pretty long time without making too many changes in it. And I'm going to give you an easy example to understand this whole concept. So the U.S. Constitution has been in place for a very long time, 250 plus years, right? And it's rarely been amended. The 27 amendments in all of that 250 years that Constitution that was written back in the 1700s has stood the time of test and has worked really well for us. It's interpreted differently by different judicial bodies, but again, rarely changed. On the other hand, look at the Constitution of the state of Florida. I can't begin to tell you how many times it's been amended. The current Constitution we have, well, originally there was an 1886 version that finally got updated and revised in 1968, so we've been dealing with the 1968 version since then. And if you vote regularly, you probably remember almost every time you go to a general election, there are state constitutional amendments on the ballot, sometimes 7, 8, 10, 11, whatever. So our state constitution tends to be amended constantly. And right now it's an interesting time because there's a state constitutional revision commission that has been appointed. And the state has a requirement that every 20 years this body is impaneled to review the charter and make recommendations for changes. So they're going through a very elaborate process, engaging citizens, hopefully, and on that November ballot in 2018, you'll see the results of their work. So they may be suggesting 5, 10, 15, 20, who knows how many amendments to the state constitution. Unfortunately, many of the amendments that have been put into the state constitution tend to be very detailed and not dealing with, as I said, the structure and function of state government. So if you've been in Florida any length of time, you may remember the one that is generally pulled out as the example of clogging up a charter or a constitution with unnecessary detail. So we actually have in our Florida constitution a provision that deals with pregnant pigs. And while that is probably a very important issue for the people that raise pigs, is it something that deals with the basic structure and function of Florida government? But it's in our constitution that tells you exactly how you have to house pregnant pigs as you're raising them. That should be a law, not a constitutional provision, because the science may change in a year or two. You may want to change that. And the only way that you can change a state constitutional provision is going back to the citizens and having them vote on it. So if you relate that to city government, the same thing. We don't want to fill the city charter with those kinds of details that could be handled as an ordinance, a city law that could be changed as the time changes and needs to be changed. Another factor that's important in city charters is that you need to leave some discretion to your city council. Now, you may or may not like the people who are sitting at this table who are your council members, but somebody liked them because they got elected to office. And in our representative government, we have a tradition of hoping that our elected officials represent us, speak for us, vote in our best interest, and if they don't, the next election we might find somebody else who will represent us better. But as their role as an elected official, we need to give them the authority to make those decisions, because certainly, you know, 80,000 people in a city this size don't want to have to deal with all the decisions that they make on a regular basis. So I always urge people, when they're looking at charters, don't tie the hands of your elected officials. It does encumber a certain amount of trust. You know, we elect them, we trust them to do the right thing, to have our best interests at heart. So if you get into too many details that eliminate their ability to respond, to react to the needs of the times, it may not be in the best interest of the city. And again, the charter really should be short and readable. So I'm going to give you just a few requirements for charters. They cannot be in conflict with the state or federal constitution. So your city cannot do something that the state constitution says cities cannot do. You can't be in conflict. They would always take precedence, whatever in the state or the federal. So we can't set up something in Palm Coast that's not allowed under state or federal law. And the cities are supposed to be in compliance with their charter. Once you have a charter in place, you're supposed to follow what the charter says you're supposed to do. And this is the key. The charter can only be changed by a vote of the electorate. So the registered voters in the city of Palm Coast are ultimately the ones who hold all the power and control over this charter, because whatever changes are recommended will not be adopted unless a majority of the citizens vote for them. There are a few administrative things that the state allows the city to change in the charter without going to the citizens, things like dates of elections and things like that. But any substantive changes in your charter only happens if the citizens vote in favor of it. And if they don't, the charter stays exactly as it is. So let me stop at this point and ask if there's any questions just about charters in general before we move into looking at the Palm Coast charter. Sure. I'm going to give you the microphone.
I'm loud enough. Okay. Why do we need a charter?
It is required by law. So if you're going to become a city, you have to have a city charter. That's why all 412 cities have them. Cities are corporations, and every corporation has a charter. And so every city has a charter. And that's true not only in Florida, but all over the United States.
Why don't the counties have a charter?
Ah, good question. Why don't the counties have a charter? Well, 20 counties in the state of Florida do have charters. And so in 1968, when the state constitution was revised, they gave local governments something called home rule, meaning that cities, and we kind of laugh about that because they gave it to us, but they keep trying to take it away, the legislature I'm talking about. But cities which already had charters, continued to have them. But in 1968, the state gave counties the option, if they so chose, they could become a charter county, which made them more like a municipal government because they could design their own government. And if you don't choose to be chartered, then the state sets up how you govern and says you'll have 5 county commissioners, there'll be partisan elections, you will pay them X amount of money, it actually has a formula, and it sets up the 5, 6 constitutional officers. And so out of the 67 counties in Florida, 20 of them have chosen to take that opportunity to be a charter county. Volusia is a charter county. Seminole is a charter county. Orange is charter. Osceola is charter. Those are the ones around you. Most of the population in Florida lives in charter counties. They tend to be the larger counties. A lot of them are the coastal counties, but they have moved inland, and there are some very small counties that have been charter. So some of those have written a charter. They all have to write it that looks somewhat like this, but some have decided they're going to be a nonpartisan county commission. Some of them have decided that they're going to include some of the constitutional officers as county employees rather than elected officials, that will hire a sheriff instead of voting for a sheriff. So counties have that choice, and Flagler, I guess, has not taken that opportunity to do that. So that's the answer to that question. Other questions about charters in general? Okay. All right. Sure.
Did you say that they can't change the charter when I vote?
That's true.
Except for minimal things.
Exactly.
That is. How long does it take to put it on the agenda?
To put it on the ballot?
On the ballot.
Okay. Well, the process happens in a variety of ways. At any time, your city council can recommend an amendment to your charter. And they have to do it by adopting an ordinance that has public hearings and then putting it on either a general election that's coming up or holding a special election for a charter change. So if something happens, 2 years after we go through this process and there's something they want to change, the council can directly pass an ordinance and it goes on the ballot. They have to do it with enough time for the supervisor of elections to get it onto the ballot, so they have some time frames they have to meet. But it could happen at any election, or you could set up a special election.
You know, with this, what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
right, how long is this going to take?
Well, this is a longer process because this is a review of the entire charter, rather than just looking at one piece that you might want to amend. So this is starting tonight, and it will eventually end, I guess, at the November election of 2018. Now, there's not going to be constant activity during all that time. We're starting with this condensed time frame of having these 4 public hearings public workshops fairly close to each other. Then the council will have time to deliberate, debate, decide what they want to put on the ballot or not, and then go through the usual process of an adopting an ordinance.
That's all going to be done on an open forum.
Yes, all of these meetings are done in the sunshine. They're all noticed. They're all open to the public, and your participation is certainly encouraged. Okay. Yes.
Is there any problem between the charters of? Yeah. Will there be any problem if there is a difference or conflict between the Flagler County Charter and the City of Palm Coast?
Because Flagler does not have a charter, then there's no issue. So your charter reigns supreme. In the counties that do have charters, frequently they'll put a provision that says which one takes precedence. And so that'll be a decision that's made, you know, that the county rules take precedence. For example, Volusia County has much more stringent requirements that the cities in Volusia have to comply with. Seminole County's charter leaves cities totally alone. So it varies depending on the county. But for here, it won't make any difference because there's no county charter to be in conflict with. Okay. So before I move into discussion, well, let me just give you this information, then we'll open it for public comment. So we're going to now start focusing on the Palm Coast Charter. And I want to tell you that your charter was adopted in 1999. That's when the city was formed. And part of the process for forming a city, you must write a charter that you submit to the legislature, and they're actually the ones who adopted your charter back in 1999. They felt it was, you know, met the needs of a city, and it was approved and adopted at that time. As far as I know, there's not been a comprehensive review or revision of the charter since that time. So you're operating on that initial charter that was adopted at the time that the city was formed. And you're a fairly new city compared to some cities that have been in existence since the 1800s. And St. Augustine, even longer than that. So the thing that started this whole process was the city council approved conducting a charter review process, and it is in compliance with state law of how you go about doing these charter reviews, and that is what has brought us together tonight. So at this point, I am going to pause my comments, and I'm going to invite any of the public that is here. If there are issues in the Palm Coast Charter that you are concerned about, that you would like to see changed, deleted, added, whatever idea you have, I'm going to invite you now to address the public. You'll have a 3-minute time limit, and Virginia's going to time you. And as you begin, if you would please, and she won't start the timer till after you give your name and address. And that's for the record. We're recording this, and we want to make sure that we capture all of the comments that people are making. So if you raise your hand, I will bring you the microphone. And again, identify yourself and your address, and then you'll have 3 minutes.
My name's Jack Carroll. I live in Palm Coast. First, I'd like to know, can we throw out all the boundaries of the city? Since 1999, I think the boundaries have changed 100 times. So actually, you don't have the same boundaries that you have when they established the charter. Now, when they established the charter, there was 30,000 people in Palm Coast. Now we have 80,000. So doesn't that kind of say, well, we don't have enough council people? We should have 7 instead of 5? We should have 7 districts instead of 5? So that each district, each council member can have a good proportion of the people. I can go on and on, but go ahead. You can have the... I'll take it at the next meeting.
Okay, good. All right. Others who would like to comment on the charter, please raise your hand. Okay.
Thank you. Kim Medley, 17 Corning Court, Palm Coast. And my first question is going to be regarding the process that's been adopted by City Council. And the reason I question it, you just stated that our initial charter from 1999 was approved by the Florida legislature. So I'm going to presume that the charter review process was just spelled out in section 10.9, subsection 2, paragraphs A and B, met the requirements of the Florida state legislature. And yet the process that's been adopted and is on the City Council's website is not the charter review process. It first says that we can't review it any sooner than 10 years on December 31st, 1999. 18 years, I think we're good on the 10 years. And it says that the charter shall be reviewed, not may be, but shall be reviewed. This is the first charter review that's been accounted by articles from Flagler Live, the News Journal, and the Palm Coast Observer. The second part is a five-member committee is to be designated. Each of the council members designate a person, and the mayor designates one at large. Palm Coast Council is to fund, shall fund the committee, and the committee review gets together. They hold meetings. The public is invited. It's held out in the sunshine. And 60 days before the general election, the committee comes before the council. Here's our recommendations. And then the council will decide whether or not to put the proposed changes on the general election ballot. The review committee is supposed to form a year before the general election, which would be next year. So, yeah, I was told that Chapter 166, Section 031 governs this charter review. The title of that chapter is Charter Amendments. Charter amendments are in our charter under Section 1 or Subsection 1 of Section 10. In fact, Chapter 166 is specifically referenced in that section, not the charter review. And then I was still curious, and I found an Attorney General opinion, AGO 2003-36. This came from a charter review committee, the City of Hallandale Beach. It was a citizen panel formed exactly the way their charter said. Citizens came together. And what I don't understand, you say the charter cannot be changed. City Council can make a proposed amendment, but it has to come before the voters. And yet our charter's been changed because we are not going by the charter review process. Thank you.
Okay. Are there others who would like to make comments? Okay. Yes? Give you another chance. And as I said, at the end of the meeting, I'll open it again to public comment because you may hear some things in the information I'm going to share now that may raise some issues or some questions. And again, I'm going to invite council and anyone else as I go through some of these issues. If you don't understand or you need clarification, please raise your hand and I'll be happy to, the best of my ability, try to clarify those for you. So I have been asked by the city, in my role as the facilitator, to go through the charter and identify issues that I thought might be of concern or interest that the council might want to address as they move through the process. And so, again, I want to make it clear that I am not saying I think you should do this, or you should change that, or you should delete that. I'm just using my experience in working with city charters to identify some areas that may need some attention. Yes? Sure.
I believe you're asking me to address the process question. Okay. You have to read together, and we've had this conversation before. This is not a new issue. This has come up several times in the past. And you do have to read together our charter, Section 10, with Chapter 166, and Ms. Medley did indicate the appropriate section. And so in our charter, it starts out with that this charter may be amended in accordance with the provisions of Municipal Home Rule Powers Act, Chapter 166. And in that 166-031, there are two sections that are very important that interrelate to the reference made in the charter, Section 10.1. And it says, it starts out, the governing body of it's under charter amendments. There is no separate section in the Florida statutes for charter review. It just says charter amendments. So that's the process in the Florida statutes which we're allowed to follow under our charter for amending our charter. So in chapter 166.031, it says the governing body of the municipality by ordinance, which as Ms. Crotty indicated, is what is ultimately going to happen if, as a result of all this process, the council wishes to make some changes, some amendments to its charter and submit that to the voters. So the governing body of municipality by ordinance may submit to the electors of said municipality proposed amendment to its charter. And you know, that's what Mrs. Medley indicated earlier. I think it's important to note something that we didn't hear, and that is that subsection 3 of the same part of the Florida statute says that a municipality may amend its charter pursuant to this section, pursuant to 166.031, notwithstanding any charter provisions to the contrary. So as I've said before, the only way I can, and I think the only reasonable way to interpret our charter is that this charter review committee is a method to amend our charter. The question is it the exclusive method? And it has been my opinion that given the language in our charter and the requirements of 161 that we have to follow, that this is one of the methods that may be used. And this is what I put, I remember when we were going through this process and I put a list of options before the city council, and this was the option you felt was that you wanted. So under 166, what you're doing is you are seeking citizen input. That's what these four workshops are. Pursuant to 166, towards adopting an ordinance that will submit to the electors the proposed amendments. Now, if you look at subsection 2 of section 10, it does provide for this process. It does provide for charter review. But what is the purpose of a charter review? What is the end game of a charter review? You're amending your charter. So to interpret subsection 2 as saying this is the only way that we can do it, it really renders meaningless the section 166.031 and section 10, subsection 1 of our charter. And one of the fundamental rules of statutory or legislative construction is not to, if there is an ambiguity and if there is some confusion, is not to give that interpretation that will render portions of the law meaningless. And I specifically take that into consideration, because otherwise, if we're going to say that the only way to do a charter review is with a charter review committee, then that renders 166.031, which says that we can do it pursuant to subsection 1, notwithstanding what's in our charter regarding charter review committee, and it specifically says that one of the ways that we can amend our charter is by ordinance and then submit that ordinance to the electors. And as we discussed earlier, that's the process that we're using. But in addition to that, we are having meetings like we're having tonight, and we're going to have three more workshops to get citizen input. So it's my opinion that what you could have done is you could have not had the meeting tonight. You could have had the other three workshops. You could have just had a couple workshops on regular workshops, directed staff to work with Ms. Crotty or whomever to prepare an ordinance and submit it to the voters in November of 2018.
Okay, so right now, if I could hold off a minute, we're not going to debate this now. When we open for public comment again at the end, I would love to have you give your thoughts on this issue. And so the questions now are just for clarification and for understanding. The public comment time is for you to share your ideas, your thoughts, what you like, don't like, object to, whatever. So we'll come back to that when we open it again for public comment. So was there another question for clarification? Okay, you sure? Okay, I don't want to close anybody out. I just want, you know, part of this whole process is to really educate the council and the community about charter. So, you know, I want you all to feel comfortable in understanding this, and I want you to have opportunity for input. Yes. Sure.
So the public is limited to 3 minutes, 6 minutes if you take advantage of both before and after. Yet other officials can speak at length, whereas with a charter review committee, There is more opportunity for the public to comment, and that's the problem.
And your question was?
My question is, we're only going to get 3 to 6 minutes.
Okay, and multiply times 4, 24 minutes. So there you go. You come to all the meetings. And there will be also public hearings if there is an ordinance developed that citizens will certainly be encouraged to come. You had a question?
Greg Feldman, 9 Lower Court in Palm Coast. It's more of a suggestion, since it will be limited to 3 minutes or 6 minutes, perhaps it would be possible for the council to designate somebody to, for a lot of us as we move through the process, there's going to be a lot of information. We might want to throw a lot out. Doing it in 3 minutes might make us auctioneers, and we lose a lot. So perhaps the council could designate an office, an email, the office of the clerk, something like that, where information could be sent.
Actually, I believe the city, and I'm going to ask Bo Falga to describe, has had something open on the website encouraging comments and thoughts and ideas, and I don't know how many people have taken advantage, but share that, please.
Sure. There is a website with an email address. We have received a couple comments, including Word documents with strike-through underline as far as suggestions. So sometimes that can be a better forum for some of those detailed suggestions than beyond public comment.
So that is open now. Anyone can comment there. And can you see the other comments? charter@palmcoastgov.com. charter@palmcoastgov.com. And can you see the comments that other people have left there? Yeah, I think it would be good to post those so you can have kind of a electronic dialogue and see what other people are thinking, if you can accommodate that. Sure.
Are we going to do this stuff at the beginning, at every meeting, this introductory?
Well, it depends on who shows up. If we have a whole bunch of new folks who have not heard this, then I think it would be important to give them an opportunity to have some understanding about this whole process. And it may be shortened a bit, because I'm sure there will be some folks that are going to try to come to all the meetings, but I think we need to do as much community education as possible. For now, we'll have them open again. We closed them because there were no comments. I gave everyone the opportunity, and we had, the few, that's why I'm real pleased that we're going to have public comment at the beginning and at the end, because I know some of this does spur some thoughts and ideas that you might not initially have had when you were just walked in the room and didn't understand some of this. So, as I was saying, I was asked to identify some of the issues that you may want to consider. A lot of the information that I'm sharing comes from a document called the Model City Charter. This is a document that is prepared by an organization called the National Civic League, and it's headquartered out in Denver. And it's an educational research group that every probably 10 years or so pulls together a group of academics, local government people, city managers, elected officials, organizations like the League of Women Voters. Representatives from all those groups come together and put out a document that's called the Model City Charter, which gives ideas on what should be included in the city charter, what should not be included, and they give you pros and cons on a lot of issues. And so I find it very helpful background information, and I believe the city has provided that document for the members of the city council. You can purchase it if you'd like online. I think it costs $15 to download, and you just go to the nationalcivicleague.com or ncl.com. Google National Civic League and under publications if you're interested in purchasing this. Oh, okay. Well, it's ncl.org. Okay, ncl.org. And I'm happy for anyone to look at my copy of it tonight. So some of these things I'm talking about that are not in your charter but are suggested in the model charter are things that I'm saying you might want to consider. There are other things that in this model charter that are not relevant to Florida, that are not appropriate, that you don't need to consider. So it's just a guide. It's not a saying you have to do this or you shouldn't do that. So as we move into your charter, and I had sent a list that probably scared Bill of all the things that I thought you might want to look at. One of the first things that just struck me, and again, I don't know that you need to do this as part of the on the ballot amendment process. Your charter is not structured the way most charters are structured. Most of them have articles and sections under the articles, and yours is all sections. And what happens, and those of you who have looked at it, you end up having a section, then a number under that, then a letter under that, then another number under that. It's very hard to work through your charter and identify places in the charter. So just a simple reformatting, I think, would improve the quality of the charter. Not a big issue, not something you have to do, but it just struck me almost immediately just that it was not in the usual format that you see in city charters. And so, let me not get into the details. Let me look. This is what's in section 1 through 5, because I don't think all of you have a copy of the charter here. And the copy is on the website, so that would be a good thing for the next meeting to have. So what is in 1 through 5 is it tells you the form of government you have, and you have a council manager form of government, and there are three other forms of government that cities in Florida can have, which are the strong mayor council form of government, the weak mayor council form of government, and the commission form of government. So you have the council manager, which is the predominant form of government in the state of Florida. Out of the 412 cities, 277 of them have the same form of government that you have. Section 4 gives powers to the city. It's very general in what the city is allowed to do under state law. And Section 5 establishes the city council, and it has all things to do with how many council members you'll have, their terms of office, how they're paid, what happens when there's a vacancy, and those kinds of things. So these are the issues that I identified. As I told you, reformatting, not that important, not substantive, but just an observation that I made. Another thing that's in the model charter and has happened since your charter was written in 1999, many charters now are starting them with a preamble. You know, we have a preamble to the U.S. Constitution. Most of us had to memorize it when we were in school. We, the people of the United States of America. A lot of cities now are starting their charters with a nice statement of the whole reason why we're a city and what we hope the city to be. And it's kind of an aspirational, but it's a nice way to open your charter with just why we're here and what we hope to accomplish in this city. So it's something you might want to consider. And in the model charter, there's a sample, but most cities craft, you know, using some of that language, but put their own language that's unique and special to their city. I'm very much in favor, and I will tell you this, to take out obsolete sections of your charter. So because you're working with your original charter, there are sections of it that are no longer relevant because it all had to do with setting up, establishing the city of Palm Coast. Well, you are established, and a lot of it talks about at the first election and how you would set up the terms so that they would be staggered. And so sections 1 and 2 of the charter are examples of that because, you know, this whole point of it is that you'll have a city and the legislature declares that this area of Flagler County will be known as Palm Coast. So some of these things can be deleted, the incorporation of the municipality. Somebody here addressed the boundaries And that is something that I also looked at. Actually, section 3 here talks about your boundaries, but it references you to section 9, which if you've looked at your charter, section 9 is pages and pages and pages of meets and bounds that actually give the description of where the city begins and where the city ends, and that has changed over time. And, you know, cities add the new descriptions there. They don't have to go to the citizens to do that. But in most current charters, rather than putting 9 or 10 pages of meets and bounds that nobody understands, I guess unless you're maybe a realtor understands, or an appraiser, a property appraiser who looks at section 3 to the boundaries. I can't even begin to, in layman's language, it makes no sense. So most of them now just have a simple statement that says the boundaries of the city are as they exist on this date and can be amended as provided by state law. Because in order to change your boundaries, you have to follow state law. It tells you very specifically how you can annex properties. And so most cities now take care of this with just 4 or 5 lines instead of 10 pages of meets and bounds. So that would be something that would clean up your charter. It doesn't change anything, doesn't change your boundaries. It just, and it also would say the boundary description is available at City Hall or is on the website, so that you know if I'm one of those people who really wants to know where these lines are, where I could find that information. Okay, on section 4, again, it deals primarily with the powers that are given to the city, and it's done very well in your charter. There's one thing that's in the model charter that's not in your charter, and it deals with intergovernmental relations, and it's not that your city can't or doesn't engage with other cities, with the county. But some cities now are putting something into their charter encouraging their city to engage in relationships with other municipalities, counties, regional entities like the Water Management District or the Regional Planning Council and things like that. So that's something that's not in your charter that you could consider putting in there. Okay. Section 5 is the largest section because that deals with the council and your terms and vacancies and all of that. And so there were just a few areas there that I saw some things that you might want to consider. When we look at the section on qualifications for office, it's interesting because whoever wrote this charter, and by the way, was there anyone who was here in 1999 that was engaged in the process of incorporating the city of Palm Coast? Anybody here? So usually the way that happens is there's usually a group of citizens that comes together, all were county residents at the time, but felt the need to have more control of their own destiny and wanted to become a city, and they went through a process, a feasibility study that's state requires you to do, and part of that is writing the charter. So some of your forefathers and mothers, I guess, were the ones who gathered together and had the idea that this community should become a city and should incorporate. So when they were setting up the requirements for your elected officials, they were concerned, and I guess it's because traditionally there had been a lot of snowbirds in Palm Coast, people who lived here part-time, and that may or may not still be the situation, but they wanted to make sure that the council members and the mayor would actually be living in the city a certain number of weeks or months, that they wouldn't just be popping in for a few months in the winter and then being gone. So in your charter it actually says that you have to reside at least 45 weeks in each year in the district you live in for the council members, and for the mayor to live in the city. So that's fine. I mean, you don't see that in a lot of other charters, but it may have been very important for Palm Coast. But what you don't see in your charter that you see in many other charters is a residency requirement in order to run for office. Your charter is silent on that. So somebody could move into Palm Coast tomorrow, register to vote, and run for office, which, you know, is fine. In fact, the model charter doesn't set up any requirements other than that. So you have to be 18 years old. And your city, you'd have to live in the district that you want to run in. But a lot of cities put in, you need to live in the city for 6 months before you could qualify to run for office. Some say a year before you could qualify to run for office. If you go beyond a year, you're probably going to get into some constitutional questions. Why do I have to be here for 2 years? Which actually, to run for the legislature, you do. But so that's something that I would think you might want to debate, you want to think about. Should somebody live here a little bit before they qualify to run for office? Now, they might not get elected if they had just, you know, only been here 3 weeks and now they're on the ballot. But again, if they raised a good amount of money, they were good campaigners, they could get elected without really knowing your community. So that's why some cities, many cities, put a residency requirement, and it's generally accepted 6 months to a year. Not an issue, not a problem as far as somebody challenging it, and accepted under the state and federal constitution. So again, none of these are things you have to do. They're just things that I saw that were not in your charter that are common in many other charters that you might want to address. So that's the residency requirement. And then again, the obsolete portions deal with things that really dealt with the initial charter that are no longer relevant for the existing charter. So the same, that's the same with the terms of office. You have 4-year terms of office, which is fine. There are still cities that have 2-year terms of office, which is problematic because they have an election every year and people hardly know what they're doing before it's time to run again. So, you know, I just, without talking about this city or any other city, generally accepted that 4 years is probably a better time frame, and that's what you currently have. So the part that's obsolete just talks about the first meeting of the new council and things like that, which are no longer relevant, and that was a long time ago. There is something that's a little confusing about the election of your vice mayor. The way it's set up in the, and by the way, the vice mayor is selected by the council. So after an election, it's not a question, because after that election, they have what's called their organizational meeting, and they select one of them, becomes the vice mayor, who, if the mayor is sick, absent, away from town, takes over that responsibility. But in a non-election year, since you only have elections every 2 years, and they talk about the vice mayor at the first meeting after the general election or at the organizational meeting during years when there's no election, it doesn't tell you when that organizational meeting is. And so I think it would be helpful, just to, as I said, to be clear, there's no confusion. It should state when that is. It could, you know, the first meeting in the month of or whatever, so that everyone knows that's the time we look at selecting the vice mayor. And it references another part of the charter where that's also in there, and so it would have to be the same thing in both sections. But it's, right now it's fuzzy. Okay, there's a section on compensation. That means the pay that these wonderful elected officials get. And pay ranges a lot in the state of Florida. There are still some cities who the elected officials are volunteers and get nothing. That's probably not a good idea because it limits who can run for office, because generally it's only, you know, either people who own their own businesses and can take time off, or retired folks, and it, you know, discourages some. Most city officials lose money by being in elected office. It costs you more to serve because of the time and the expenses and being away from your family and other things. So for most, and hopefully all people who run for local office, it's a labor of love because you want to help your community. But generally there is some compensation that helps cover some of those expenses. So in your charter, it's a little confusing because it first states that compensation as established by ordinance. So the city has to actually vote the council on what the compensation will be. And because it's an ordinance, that means they have to have two public hearings and you get to weigh in if they're looking to change their salaries. But it also in here actually sets the dollar amount. So while it says they set it by ordinance, in the next paragraph it says the mayor shall receive an annual salary of $11,400 and it says the council shall receive an annual salary of $9,600. So how can they set it by ordinance if the charter already says what it is?
So
they, well, the original charter says you'll establish it by ordinance, and then it tells you what it will be. So if in the charter it says what it is, you don't need an ordinance because the charter sets up what it would be. So in most cities and in the model charter, it does say the council will set its compensation by ordinance. It will not take effect until after the next election, or sometimes they say 6 months after the next election, so that if they do try to raise their salary and you don't think that was a good idea, you run against them and you vote them out of office. But again, it gives the leeway to change that salary if need be. Now, honestly, I will tell you politically, it's very hard for elected officials to raise their salaries because generally it's not a popular thing. So you rarely see elected officials doing that. But rather than having it in the charter where there's no leeway, you have to have that exact same. And 10 years from now, that may not be the appropriate figure. So the general recommendation is just put in there that they said it. They have to do it by ordinance. So, you know, they'd have to actually publicly vote to raise their salaries. A few cities actually put formulas into their charter, and they give an automatic cost of living raise or something like that. So you can do it that way. And those are cities who never changed. They were paying $100 a month to their elected officials and didn't have the political courage to try to pass an ordinance to raise it, put into their charter a formula where it would tiny bit incrementally increase over time. So again, you know, it'll be up to discussion of you all, input, and to the council. But right now, I see a conflict between saying it's set by ordinance, but then actually putting the dollar figures in. So generally, you do not see dollar figures in a charter because, again, you want it something that you don't have to go back to a vote of the citizens to change something like that, but do it by ordinance. Okay. So the next section where you might want to consider something has to do with the section that deals with vacancies, forfeiture, suspension, recall, all of these things that you can do when you have elected officials who aren't behaving themselves, I'll put it that way, or for some reason leave office. And so, you know, there are legitimate reasons why people, sometimes you move, you know, you get a job change or you buy a house out of your district or for whatever reason, and then of course you're not eligible to continue in office and there's a vacancy and the charter gives you ways of filling it. Forfeiture is a different kind of vacancy, and that's when people are doing something that, and in your charter it spells out, forfeiture. The mayor or any other council member shall forfeit his or her office upon determination by the council acting as a body that he, she lacks at any time or fails to maintain during his term or her term any qualifications for office. So that's really the residency. They have to be there 45 weeks a year. Is convicted of a felony or enters a plea of guilty or nolo contendere to a crime punishable as a felony, even if adjudication of guilt has been withheld. And then it also has, is convicted of a first-degree misdemeanor arising directly out of his or her official conduct or duties, and is found to have violated any standard of conduct or code of ethics established by law, and or suspended by the governor, is absent from 3 consecutive regular council meetings without being excused by the council. So that's currently what is in your charter. In the model charter, there's another statement that talks about violates any provision of the charter. And actually, there's a recent case, and you may have read about it in your paper because it happened in a city in Volusia County, where the mayor was removed from office by the council. That was a forfeiture of office because he violated provisions of their charter that dealt with his engaging directly with employees and giving them orders, which you're not allowed to do in the charter. And his city council actually removed him. Your charter does not have that statement violating a provision of the charter as grounds for forfeiture. So again, you have plenty of grounds here, but that's one that you don't have that you might want to consider. And in filling the vacancy in the office of the mayor, I found it interesting because the process is a little different for the mayor than it is for the council members. And this talks about if for any reason a vacancy occurs in the office of the mayor, the vice mayor assumes that position, which you would assume that would happen, and within 30 days following the occurrence of such a vacancy, a special election shall be called to fill the remainder of the term. And it doesn't say if this vacancy occurs when maybe it's just 2 months before, you know, before there's going to be a regular election, or 6 months before, and why couldn't the vice mayor just continue in office? Special elections cost money. So you don't want to have to have a special election if there's no reason to. Now, if the mayor vacated office, you know, God forbid something happened to the mayor, you know, and the mayor's no longer there or able to, and the mayor has only been serving for 2 or 3 months, then you probably want to have a special election because it's a 4-year term and you want somebody who's been elected by the citizens to serve that. But right now, any vacancy of the mayor calls for a special election within 30 days. So that may be something that you need to put a time frame, as it is with the council members. If half their term is still remaining, you do one thing. And if half is not, then you do another. You appoint someone to fill out the rest of the term until the next election, which you can do too, and that would just put that person in for 2 years. So I think it's something that just needs to be reviewed, how that vacancy is handled, particularly in the instance of the mayor, because it is seems to be okay the way it's done for the council. Another thing that is not in your charter, doesn't need to be, the model charter has it, allows the council to make investigations. And it might not be a bad idea to have something like this, particularly in a council manager form of government, if the council fears that something's going on that, you know, they don't think is on the up and up, the council might want the ability to make those kinds of investigations without being in violation of the charter, because in a council manager, the manager is responsible for the day-to-day operation and council members aren't supposed to be involved in that. But if you need to investigate, you might want to have something in the charter that allows the council to do that. This is another thing that I found interesting, and I checked with the city attorney before the meeting. When it talks about your quorum, which for the meetings, of course, under Robert's rules and most organizations, you have to have a quorum to conduct business and to pass motions. And out of a 5-member council, including the mayor, 3 people is a quorum. And so to do any business in the city, you have to have 3 people there. But it does have a statement in here that talks about the quorum. A majority of the council, including the mayor, shall constitute a quorum. So that's the 3 I'm talking about. No action of the council shall be valid unless adopted by an affirmative vote of the majority of the council members and mayor in attendance. Now that means if there's 3 people there, that's a majority. of the council, so you have a quorum, but two would be a majority of those attending. So two elected officials could actually pass an ordinance under your charter. And in many cities, they will put that it has to be a quorum of the entire council. So there would have to be at least three people voting in favor of something to pass it. Now, sometimes they make a distinction that that would just be for ordinances, and there may be certain types of ordinances that you want to make sure at least three council people are voting in favor of that. But again, I think that's something that needs to be looked at, because this idea of only two out of the five being able to pass something may not be in the best interest of the city. Other couple of... Pardon? Oh, instead of in the charter?
Yes.
Probably. Probably. You could have an ordinance that set that up. Yeah. Well, I'm going to stop in a couple of minutes and open it to questions on all of these things, and then we can certainly address that to him. So let me just finish the last couple. So there's a section, it's not actually called prohibitions in your charter, but it does put some in. It talks about limit of employment of council members, like you can't get a job with the city until 1 year after your term expires, which I think is a good thing to have, just so nobody, you know, uses that opportunity of being an elected official to set up a job for themselves when they finish their term of office. So there's generally in the model charter a section called prohibitions that has that, and it also has what you call non-interference by city commission, and this is in just about every charter and a council manager form of government, to make sure that the council understands their role is as policy makers, and then the city manager's role is to run the day-to-day operation of the city, and that they're not to interfere. Although there, what you don't have is, there is, and I think state law probably takes care of it, but in many charters, a statement on holding other office, that you can't hold other office while you're holding the office of city council or mayor, and also has a prohibition on that the council cannot try to force the mayor to hire or fire somebody, that you know, they can express to the mayor their disappointment in somebody, but that they can't say, you've got to fire, you know, the fire chief, or you've got to fire the public works, pardon? That the council is prohibited from telling the manager that you cannot fire, or you've got to hire my brother. Now, there's state laws that don't allow nepotism, but again, there's no clear statement in your charter that prohibits them from trying to influence appointments and removals from office. So that might be something that you want to look at. And in the final one in this section that I looked at, had to do with that non-interference clause, which is in your charter. However, it does not have a statement that's in many non-interference clauses that tells the council that you cannot give orders to any city employees other than the attorney and the city manager, who are your employees, and you can't do it publicly or privately. And so this idea is to try to hold that council manager government intact, so that a council member can't call up the public works director and say, I want you to go fill the potholes on street so-and-so. That would be interference, but it specifically would be giving orders, and your charter doesn't specifically say give orders. So that's just a small item that I noticed. So that's my review of sections 1 through 5. At the next meeting, we'll be talking about 6 and 7, then we'll do 7 and 8, and anyway, we divided it up this way. Again, you'll be able to comment on any of the sections at any of the meetings, but now I would like to open it for questions about any of the items in sections 1 through 5, anything that I talked about that you didn't understand or want more information or clarification, both to the council and to the audience. So your question was about doing that by ordinance rather than having in the charter? Okay. And it related to, you don't remember, and I don't either. Bill, do you was to the quorum.
Jack asked a question about quorums, and right now in our charter says that it's a majority of quorum
that can, would be is required for an affirmative vote, a majority of the quorum. And you raised an issue about, but what about ordinances, and is that sufficient with regard to ordinances? And I did want to point out, Jack, and to everyone, that there is language in our existing charter that says unless otherwise provided by law. So there are some state statutes that place requirements on at least having a majority of the entire council for certain actions. Now, that doesn't mean that this council or anybody could say, if we're going to pass an ordinance in the city of Palm Coast, it's going to be a majority of the entire council. Now, but Mike, I would caution that if you start requiring a majority of the entire council for passing motions or passing resolutions or passing ordinances, then you have a regular meeting and you've got a full agenda and two people are absent. That means that you're going to have unanimous vote under, if you had that provision, to pass anything. Now, that's possible, but it just, there are always unintended consequences resulting from anything that you do. So that would be, because I've seen that happen where you have a charter or a code that applies to like land development decisions, and it says you've got to have a supermajority for this. Well, you could have a supermajority that's less than a quorum. So you just, you basically eliminate the ability to take any action at that meeting.
I think his question was, could that be done by ordinance establishing that majority rather than having it in the charter?
Jack, but you'd have to change the charter, because the charter specifically says right now that it's majority of a quorum. So you can't leave the charter the way it is now and then pass an ordinance that says it's got to be the entire majority of the entire council, because you'd have passed an ordinance that's inconsistent with your existing charter.
Okay. So, I mean, if the interest was in doing this, I totally agree with what Bill is saying. You don't want it for everything you're passing, like resolutions or some certainly motions and things. You don't want to not be able to do your business, but there may be some kind of ordinances that you really want to have, at least three people voting affirmatively to pass that, and those will be the significant ones that are affecting most of the people in the city. So that's the idea behind that. Questions on other parts of these sections? Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. On the bullet point with regard to investigations, could you give a couple examples of what you're referring to? I'm unclear on that.
Okay. Well, I'll show you what the model charter says about investigations. And the whole idea is not to think that there's going to be anything going on in the city. And remember, we're not talking about anybody who's in office now. So we're not talking about existing staff, but if there was at some point, sometimes you make a bad hire and you got some unethical stuff going on in a department and it's been covered up because you start to hear rumors that something's going on. So in many charters it says the city council may make investigations into the affairs of the city and the conduct of any city department, office, or agency, and for this purpose may subpoena witnesses, administer oaths, take testimony, and require the production of evidence. And then they actually put in a fine or imprisonment for not complying with this. But it's just giving, it's kind of a checks and balance thing, that if you have people who are covering up stuff, the council would have the right to have an investigation and try to, get to the bottom of this and find out what's really going on. Right now, you don't have that provision in your charter.
With that investigation, do you know of any cities where they would include protection for whistleblowers in that event?
The protection for whistleblowers is usually put in an ethics code. So it's not usually in that investigation thing, but many cities have set up, and it can even be in your personnel policies, it doesn't need to be in your charter, that you have a system set up that people can report things.
It could be a violation of charter, it could be a violation of code,
But it's going to be a violation of federal and state law. It protects all the
Yeah, you can't fire them because they...
For us, it'd be more of a process.
Yeah, who do you call? Right, how do you report these kinds of things? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, question. More questions.
Can we delete the when somebody wants to run for office, they have two choices. They're going to get 10% or 1% of the people in the district, or they can pay a part of their salary. That's almost like buying your own seat. You know, so if you had have a backing from your Republican or Democrat, and you don't have enough to cover the 10%, so you put your money in, right, and then you have all these people back, and you see you're actually buying your own seat. Can that be eliminated, or is that? And another thing I want to bring up is, if a council member decides to run for county commission, right, they make their declaration, well, let's say 8 months before election, so it gives them time to run. But they won't resign from the office. Now, can you put something like that in the charter that says if you declare that you have to get out, you can't just, like, just bring up one of the judges in the Supreme Court judge, I think, decided to retire. I don't remember that. And he wouldn't retire because then the governor would have a choice of governor. So he stayed till the end and then retired. Can we eliminate something like that in the charter?
Well, most of the election laws are covered by state law, so you have to be in compliance with those. You do have to resign to run for another office, but if it doesn't, that office doesn't begin until after your term would end, you don't have to resign your office. You can continue until your office ends and that one would begin, even if you lose, but you can't run for your office again, and you have to step down and somebody else is running for your seat. But I don't believe we can require them to, once they announce they're running, and I may be wrong on this, but and as far as the petition, you can do away with the petition totally. You could do away with the fee of paying a percent. I mean, those are things you could change in your charter.
Jack, the Florida statutes has about 50 pages. It's called the Election Code. It's in the late 90s and in the early 100s in the Florida statutes. It sets up all the standards for the qualifications and for how people run for office for all elected offices that are filled by election in the state of Florida. So the qualifications that you have in your charter can't be inconsistent with the Florida statutes. You can supplement it, and you can put things in there that are not inconsistent with the Florida statutes, but you can't put something in there that is inconsistent. So then you raised a question about, the resign to run. That's in Chapter 99, and there's a specific set of guidelines that if there is an overlap, as Marilyn said, in your current office versus the office that you'd be running for, then you have to provide in a timely fashion the notice of intent to resign, and it's irrevocable. So you can't, like, lose and then keep your seat that you had, because it's an irrevocable notice that you're resigning. And it doesn't happen very often, but it's happened in Palm Coast where folks have been in office as a city council member, and they've decided to run for another office, county commission or whatever, and they overlap, and so they have to resign in order to run. And it's an irrevocable notice that they have to submit. Correct. They just can't say... Correct, but they can't say, oh, I'm changed my mind, I'm not going to run for this office. They've resigned. It's effective. It's effective the normal end of their term, but it... Or another date, you know, but they can't have overlapping office, right?
I'm just going to bring this up as an aside because I'm not in any way trying to say you should do this. I thought I understood all these election laws. And another city that I'm currently working with, some citizens brought forth a recommendation that that city limit the level of contributions that anybody could make to a candidate for city office. And I'm thinking, no, the state sets that up. You can't have your own law. Well, guess what? I found out City of Tallahassee amended their charter 2 years ago and put in a limit of $250 is all you could get from anybody. You could, for the primary, get $250. And the state allows $1,000. So apparently, nobody has challenged that. And then I found out the city of Cocoa Beach has a similar campaign finance limit, but they didn't do theirs in their charter. They did it by ordinance. And this is the first that I'd known that anybody was messing with the state campaign finance contribution laws. And so again, I'm not saying that's anything you should do, but you find people doing things. Yeah, I know. Right, and there are cities that don't. There are cities that don't require you to put up a percent of your salary because there are cities that don't even have a salary. There are some who have more. You need to have more signatures than your 1%. Those are things that you could address in this charter, and you could change if you wanted to. Yeah, as long as you're not in conflict with state law. Yeah. Other questions? Yes, sir. For a question, and then we're going to give you. Are you just going to do comment now? Because I'm. Let me close out the questions, and then I'll open it for comments. I just again want, if there's any questions, any clarifications, council members, any questions you have, let's continue with that, and then I'll open it again for public comment, and you'll have 3 minutes. Right. Any other questions on things that we've talked about? Okay. All right. Public comment.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Norm Mugford. I live in District 2 here in Palm Coast. I've been here almost 30 years. I've been involved in the politics here in town. I've been on one of the boards in the city presently for approximately 8 years. I was on another board prior to that for 2 years. So I've been involved in some of the city activity. Now, first of all, I'd like my voice to be heard that I personally don't believe the charter should be changed. Don't fix what ain't broke. Now, if it's Scribner's error, then I think maybe that can be taken up and those changes can be made. But one of the issues that came to my attention several years ago when there was a position to be appointed by the city for a city council member, I was one of the people running for that position. Three people ended up in qualification for the board to make a vote. The first person was taken out on the first vote. The next two votes were tied. The third person was appointed to that position. That person, to me, in my opinion, was in violation of the qualifications of the charter. That person had a home in Jacksonville, had a condo here in Palm Coast, but the condo was homesteaded. But he did not spend any time here. The qualifications don't specify that. So he was put into office for 2 years, had no idea what was going on in Palm Coast. As I said, I've been here almost 30 years before the city became a city, and I think that if anything in the charter that should be changed should be the qualifications should be very specific, who is eligible to run for office or appointment. Again, I thank the city council for being here. I thank the city staff for being here. I think all of you guys do a good job. I work with you on a regular basis. So I think you should continue what you're doing. Thank you for having this opportunity.
Okay, other comments? Can I take him first?
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to the one I brought up earlier about investigations, and with absolutely no offense to any of the members here, I would strongly be against that, very strongly, and I'll tell you why. Because in the council manager form of government, in my opinion, any investigation, if we call it an investigation or inquiry, is probably a better word, but any inquiry that is non-criminal in nature should be done by the manager. That should be part of the operation. If it's one of his subordinates, if he's too close to it, if it involves the manager, then I believe that that's something that should go either to the state attorney or to the sheriff's office, their integrity unit. And I would not want to, A, put the burden on the council members to try to do an investigation, and also give them that responsibility and therefore the liability. And I would be firmly against that.
Thank you. Kim Medley, 17 Corning Court, Palm Coast. I did read Section 3 that Mr. Reichman referenced. There is a second sentence that follows, and it says, "This section shall be supplemental to the provisions of all other laws relating to the amendment of the municipal charters, and it is not intended to diminish any substantive or procedural power vested in any municipality by present law." And I would argue the charter review vests a substantive power with its people through the charter review committee. And that's being completely ignored. This is wonderful. I've appreciated this, and I've learned a lot. But the reason this is being circumvented is because we, the people, are being told council knows best. They get to see this on an everyday basis. We don't know enough to come together. And I would argue that it's when people who don't understand the way things work, or the good old boy system, when they come together, that's when you see critical skills, critical thinking skills on display. They ask why, they ask why not, and they ask what if. And that's not going to take place in this when people are only given 3 minutes before, 3 minutes after, and assuming they go to all of these meetings. So I love music, and I love music when politics come together. This is an eminence front. It's a put on. And this is essentially the fox guarding the hen house. And the reason is control, maintaining the status quo, and money. And if you're looking for any change to come about as a result of this, that's a pipe dream. Thank you.
Okay, others who would like to comment? Yes, sir.
I am George Meegan. I live at 107 Forrester Place. That's in Council District 2. I agree with what was just said. I think we have a bit of a sham going on here, and want the council to understand that the committee should be formed post-haste and followed as per the previous statements.
Thank you. Others? Yes? Okay. Don't want to leave anybody else out. Okay. Sure.
And it's a process question. So, and this is for me, really, just alone. So I have two sets of suggestions for charter changes. One set I got over the last couple of years through group meetings, house meetings with groups of people who said, here are the changes we want. And then I have some that I'd like to see. When will I bring those up? What's the best time for council to bring them?
So the intent is that the council workshop the end of November, after you've heard all the input from all the citizens, that you know you can reflect and talk about all of these that have been brought up, and any that you personally have, and any of the items that I've given you to consider. So that will probably not be a short meeting. It's my, and if it needs to be more than one meeting, you know, we'll schedule additional workshops, because you know, it's not my intent to short circuit this process at all, and to keep it as open and debated and, you know, as possible.
So based on the majority here, or percentages, we have a few people who are concerned with our interpretation, I'm going to say, of the charter and how it's reviewed. What steps could we take to confirm that? And you see what I'm saying? This is where I'm a little confused. Bill, you can help me on this. So let's say in the charter I put that if 5% of the electorate can bring forth a change to the charter, okay? Now in the state, it's 10%, okay? What I thought I heard from you is, well, we just nullified that 10%. No, okay. That's how I'm thinking. So let me... Yeah.
Actually, in our charter, it's been recognized that the 25%, which is in a different section, it doesn't fly. It's 10% because that's what the state statute is. So that's already been corrected through a footnote that was done. This has been a year or so ago. So... I think the issue is shall versus may, and what you're hearing, what I'm hearing tonight, and we've heard this before, is that if you're going to amend your charter and you're going to do it through a charter review process, then you have to have a charter review committee, and that's certainly an option. That's always been an option. It's never been said to anybody that you didn't have to, that you couldn't do it by charter review. The only issue is, must you do it by a charter review committee? And I've given you my interpretation, and people disagree. And so you said, what are your options? Well, you could, as far as to get clarification, well, one option is to create a charter review committee. Then some people will be made happy and other people will not be happy. So, I mean, I don't know that there's an option you're going to choose to make everyone happy. If you feel that they're, you're not sure about the powers, that you believe there is a concern about what the charter means, what this language in Section 10 means, you could direct my office to investigate whether there would be jurisdiction in the Florida courts for a declaratory judgment action to try to get a court opinion in advance. That's certainly an option. Now, it is statutory. It's under Chapter 86. You can't just go in and ask for opinions from the court willy-nilly, so I'd have to research whether the court would have jurisdiction to answer that legal question. But that certainly would be something that might be an option. But, you know, I mean, to me, again, you try to reconcile language in Section 10 that probably in a perfect world in 1999, I wouldn't have recommended as far as clarity for amending. We haven't gotten there yet. So, and I'm trying not to give my 10 cents on this, but if you ask me when we get there, my recommendation is please pick Section 10, because I've been asked this question over and over again, as well as timing of charter review, and the language for that is clunky. Well, no, I'm talking about it shall be done no sooner than 10 years, but after that it may be done. I mean, that's just the craziest language, but there it is, and we're doing our best to work with it.
Actually, it's a perfect example of why sometimes you need to amend your charter, because you've got language that is not clear, that's ambiguous, that's contradictory, and it's put you in this kind of position now. So that section, you know, we'll be talking about when we get, I guess, to the fourth public workshop, but it's certainly something that can be addressed.
Nick Klupas, City of Palm Coast. I just want to say thank you, Ms. Crotty, for everything tonight. It was very educational, and thank you to everyone who came in attendance. That's much appreciated. Thank you for comments, whether they're reinforcing or telling us that we need to make changes. They're appreciated. And thank you to all the city employees that are here on staff that put this all together and allowed us this platform. And I look forward to three more meetings and then more.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, that sounded like a perfect closing out. Hope to see you all at subsequent public workshops. And again, don't hesitate to share your thoughts and ideas on the website. I think that'll be most helpful as we put all this information together. So thank you very much, and good night.